Okay, that's post Shavuos. Now we really have to start learning Torah. So the Parshas HaShavua, Parshas Nasi, we're going to take a look at the end of the third reading, which corresponds to the Chumash for today. Chapter 5, we'll start at verse 5. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemer. God speaks to Moses saying, Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, ish o isha, a man or woman, ki ya'asu mikol chateisam, chateis ha'adam, pardon me, who will perform any of the sins in which people might limoil mal ba'ashem, behave treacherously towards God, va'oshmo ha'nefesh ahi, that soul will then be guilty or bear its guilt. So let's take a look immediately in Rashi to try to figure out what's going on over here. What treachery are we speaking about? Whose trust are we violating? Limel mal b'Hashem. So Rashi says, Harei chozar v'kosav kan parshas goizel v'nishbo al sheker. The Torah here repeats two kinds of mitzvahs which are considered to be an act of sedition and treachery against Hashem. What are those two mitzvahs? That's the idea of goizel, the person who brazenly robs somebody else, and that concept of swearing falsely. So it's one thing to surreptitiously steal, it's quite another to do it brazenly. It's a different kind of sin. And somebody who would use God's name in order to advance his or her criminal activities. It's bad enough you do the wrong thing, but here you're actually utilizing the name of Hashem in order to carry out your nefarious intentions. Hi ha'amuda b'parshas Vayikra. This is the very same ideas that we discussed a full book ago in the fifth chapter of Leviticus. That it says, a soul that would sin, umal amal b'Hashem, and it behaves treacherously towards God, v'chichesh b'amisoy, and that person might deny a responsibility, that which it owes somebody's fellow. So you owe your fellow something, and you deny, say, I don't owe you anything. We have absolutely nothing to discuss. I have no responsibility towards you. So then why is it repeated here? If by Rashi's own admission, this is something that's already talked about in Leviticus 5, then why is it suddenly repeated in Numbers 5? Rashi answers that question immediately, anticipates you asking it. And he says, V'nishneis kan, it's repeated here, b'shvil shnei dvarim sheniskad shubah, for two things which have come, two details which are introduced here in a novel way, which weren't spoken of earlier. Ha'echad, one is shekasov, that it says here in verse 7, v'hisvadu, that they are going to confess. So we have this idea that a confession is required. And before we didn't talk about a confession, for whatever reason, we couldn't talk about a confession before, and now we can talk about the idea that there has to be a confession in place. And we'll soon see what that means. Limeid, this teaches us, it shows us, she'eni chayiv ha'chaymesh ve'osham al pi edim, that a person would not be obligated to pay the additional fifth. A person would not be obligated to bring this guilt offering unless they themselves admitted to the wrongdoing. But if witnesses came along and bore testimony to the fact that they in fact did something wrong, they would not have to be, but they would not be held liable for adding an additional fifth. So for example, if the robbery was $100, they'd have to pay $120, an additional fifth. Pardon me, $125. And that would be ad sheyoda. That only happens until ad sheyoda bedavar, until the person themselves admits. That's number one. So that's why it has to be repeated here. V'hasheni. And the second reason that we have to repeat the same mitzvah, which already we discussed previously a book ago, is al gezel ager, with regard to a person who might steal from somebody who has no family to be able to make restitution. Now, how is it possible somebody has no family? If he or she has no spouse, then they have siblings. If they have no siblings, then their parents have siblings. If their parents don't have siblings, their grandparents have siblings. And those siblings would have children. It's not possible for somebody who's part of the Jewish people not to have relatives. You just keep going back generation after generation until you'll find somebody's siblings, and somebody's siblings had progeny, offspring. What's the only way you could have a Jew who has no family? this would be an instance where a Jew converts to Judaism. So therefore, we're adding in now this idea of Gezel Hager, Shehu Nitan LeKoyanim, that you can't pay back the family because the family doesn't exist. So who do you make restitution to? Answer is you have to give it to the Koyanim. And that's something new, something we haven't talked about earlier. So that's what's going on here. We're talking about an old mitzvah, something that's been discussed earlier already, and we're adding details over here. Now the Sifri Zuta, which is the minor version of the Sifri. Sifri is the Medrash Halacha that accompanies the books of Numbers and Deuteronomy, Bamidbar and Dvarim. And then there's a version of it called Sifri Zuta. The Sifri Zuta says that when we say Chatais HaAdam, the sins of person, we refer to the sins that are Beinoy L'Chaveire, any kind of sin that could be between one person and the other, which includes Gneveis, Gzeleis, even Lashon Hara. So if you did a sin against somebody, then you have to confess and you have to ask them forgiveness. The Medrash Rabbah tells us that this talks to us about the Gezel Hager, that even though you're not actually making restitution to the family, you're making restitution to the Kohanim because this person has no family, nonetheless, you still are required to pay that additional fifth. And that's, of course, what Rashi follows. Ramban follows the Sifri Zuta. Ramban says, anything that a person sins, ish be ish, one person against the other, the kichesh ba'misa, then there's denial. Somebody does something wrong, whether they take advantage, whether they cause a loss of money, whatever it may be, you do something wrong to somebody else, and then you have to deal with it. So instead of dealing with it, instead of coming clean and saying, look, I did A, B, C, and D, a person denies having done it. That's what we speak about here. And that's the limel mal, that's the real idea of somebody behaving treacherously towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Sifarno adds that precisely because we speak about a ger, precisely because the subject of discussion here is the convert, that's why it's called behaving treacherously towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because the convert is special to Hashem. And because you behave badly towards a convert, that's why it's considered to be a treachery that's directed before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All right? So let's take a look and see what happens here. V'hisvadu es chatosam, then they must confess their sins, asher asu they have done. V'heshiv es hashamay b'reishay, you have to return the guilt, the chamish in its full number, whatever it was you took advantage, and chamishisay yosef alav, you have to add a fifth. So a fifth means that after you finish adding it, it comes out to be a full fifth. V'nasan la'asher osham loy, you would do this to whomever you wronged. So you wronged somebody, you took advantage of them in a fiduciary way, now restitution has to be made. Now if you hear about the Gezel Hager, verse 8, v'mein la'ish goyel, if a person does not have a goyel is a relative that could redeem. So it's a euphemism for a relative. There is no relative. Nobody is there to redeem the person. Nobody is there to make sure that things are looked after when a person has passed on. Lahashiv ha'asham a love, so that you might be able to return the asham, the guilt towards them, which is hamushav lahashem lakoyin milvad elakipudim asher chaper ba'alav. So then you have to return to the koyin. This is in addition to the Eila Kippurim, this is in addition to the special ram of atonement through which a person is going to be able to obtain Hashem's pardon. So here's exactly what Rashi was talking about, quoting the Medrash Rabbah. Here is where we find the novelty with regard to Gezel Hager. We knew about this earlier. We didn't know that it would apply to a different family, because the Kohen didn't lose anything. The Kohen's family didn't lose anything. So you can't really call it restitution per se, because you didn't take anything from the person that you're making this payment towards. Nonetheless, because this was an act of treachery against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because this was an act in which you violated the bond of what God expects from you, so because of this, the additional fifth has to be given, and whoever is going to give the principal to, they will also receive the additional fifth. That's the bare bones of this pasuk. The Or HaChaim says, why does it say va'oshma hanefesh hahi, that soul is guilty? What's hanefesh? So the Or HaChaim says, when a person swears falsely and uses Hashem's name in order to advance criminal activity, in order to justify a getaway with an act of theft, says the Or HaChaim pagam benafshei, then you actually harm your soul. Swearing in Hashem's name falsely damages the soul. Usually we don't speak about damaged souls. Usually the souls don't get damaged. Usually the body gets damaged. Usually the person is culpable, but souls don't get damaged. Souls always remain pure. Souls remain pristine. Souls don't get hurt. But here, the Rechaim says, because that's such a heinous sin, there would be a pagam, there would be a damage. The soul itself would become soiled. The heishiv, so you have to have, in verse 7, it says, the confession takes place, and then the heishiv. So why do we use we start with a plural. We start off the pasuk, we say, v'hisvadu, which is plural. And then it says, not the heishivu, but the heishiv, which is singular. You start off plural, we end up singular. That's unusual. So the Arachaim says, the reason we start b'lashon rabim, in the broader sense, which is inclusive of many, and we finish b'lashon yachid in a singular sense, is because in the mitzvah of vidui, everybody is responsible equally. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what the situation is, whether you're rich or poor. You did something wrong, you must come clean. People must admit they did this wrong. And that's with regard to the hisvadu. He says, but when it comes to the asham, when it comes to bringing the guilt offering, we have this idea of an asham, which is a korban oyla v'yerded. It's a korban which can be more valuable if you're able to afford it, or you can get away with bringing something smaller. So it's korban oyla, it can become more valuable, or yerded, or it can be brought down to a lower common denominator. So when it comes to the heishiv, that's where there might be a distinction. But when it comes to the hisvadu, there's no distinction. It doesn't matter who you are. Whatever, you did something wrong, you must be able to, so to speak, fess up and admit, here's what I did, I regret it, I'm ready to make restitution, I'm going to do what's necessary to obtain Hashem's pardon. And that's the meaning then of Bereishai. Bereishai literally means on its head. Ibn Ezra says, Kifi Shavye. Bereishai means the value of whatever you did wrong. And then there's a fifth, but the value of whatever you did wrong that has to be dealt with. And that's, of course, what we call in Hebrew the keren, the principle. So whatever you made the oath on, as Rashi says, you made an oath on something, fine. You made an oath, and you have to deal with whatever the oath was. As Rashi says, it's ashamay bereishai, his guilt is upon him. Shehu hakeren, that is the principle. Shenishba olav, that's what he swore over. He said, I don't owe that principle. I didn't do A, B, C, or D. I didn't take X, Y, and Z. Oh, really? And then you swore about it. You say you swore, you deny taking this principle, and then you swore about it. Uh-huh, this is a big problem. You can't just walk away now. Then you have to do what is necessary to obtain Hashem's pardon. For whoever you took it from them, so you have wronged them, and you're guilty towards them, and that's why the payment would have to go in their direction. All right. So this is the basic meaning of this concept, of this mitzvah, that when you do something wrong or behave treacherously, you have to confess, you have to admit doing wrong, and after you confess and admit doing wrong, you have to make the payments, and you have to bring a special korban. So let's take a look now on page Samach Beis in the Biurim book. The Rebbe introduces us something very, very interesting. Simen Vav. Page Samach Beis, Simen Vav, of Parshas Nasi. Here's another quote. We talked before about the Sifri Zuta. Here's a quote now from the Sifri Zuta. V'hisvadu eschatoshem asher asu, says the Sifri Zuta, ein b'mashma vidui ela ba'aretz. When I hear the word confess, I think Israel. Oh, confession, that must mean Israel. Minay enaf begolus. How do I know this applies also in an exilic state where we're displaced and not in our homeland? How do I know that vidui, that there too one must perform a confession? So the Sifri Zuta responds, Amart v'hisvadu esavoinam v'esavoin avoisam. We speak here about confessing their sin, their parents' sin, literally the father's sin. So just like the parents, the ancestors, came from Eretz Yisrael, and the children were dispersed and sent out of Eretz Yisrael, and they are living under exilic conditions. So just as the parents would have had to make this confession, so too, the children would have to make this confession, and whether you're in Israel or not, this mitzvah applies. So what's the problem with that comment of the Sifri Zuta? The problem is, why would I think it's only applicable in Israel? So I would think it's only in Israel. Why? Nobody suggests it. It doesn't say it. Nobody suggests it. It doesn't say v'hisvados chatosham asher also b'chol makim, or even like sometimes we have this idea. It says chok olam. It's an eternal statute, which will tell you that even the Beis Hamikdash is not extant, or even when not in Eretz Yisrael, it still applies. It doesn't say lema'an yisvadu ba'artzam or ba'admasam. Where did the Sefri Zutti come up with this idea that I would have thought that it's only in the land of Israel? Phew. Thankfully, I have now the Torah illuminating my path and sharing with me that the concept of making this confession is not only in Eretz Yisrael, but wherever I might be. Bitchilo my kasover. Why would I have thought that? Where does that come from? So this is the Rebbe's explanation. V'yesh leimer. Tachlisoi shel havidui. What is the purpose of this confession? And I should point out right at this juncture that in Judaism, we don't believe in confessing to people. You confess to God, not to people. And so much so that confessing to people is ridiculous and doesn't accomplish anything. But furthermore, the notion of confessing before Hashem has to be done in a way that other people don't know or hear what you're saying, because otherwise it's a chil Hashem. You can't get up in front of the whole world and say, I did this and the other thing against God. That's not nothing to sing about. It's nothing to promulgate or promote or publicize. It's bad enough you did it. Now you have to talk about it. You have to sing about it too. They tell a story. There was once a little bird, and the bird is very cold, and he was hobbling along, and he passed by a big bull, and the bull made a deposit right on his head. The bird was indignant. He was so angry. He said, how could the bull do that to me? And he started to chirp and make noise. And what happened? He made so much noise, a cat heard the making noise. He came and he ate up the bird. He says, what's the lesson? Well, there's three lessons from the story. Lesson number one, not every time a deposit is made on your head were you the intended target. So that's number one. Number two, the bird actually initially was happy because he was warm. It was cold and he was warm. So he said, sometimes somebody makes a deposit, he's not even know he's so bad. What's number three? When you're in doo-doo, you don't have to sing about it. What do you tell? I tell the whole world, I did an Aveda. Everybody should know I did an Aveda. What are you telling everybody for? So when we stand in shul, especially even in regular time, we're saying Tachlim, especially on Yom Kippur, when we say, you know, the whole Al-Chet, it's not a problem to say Al-Chet out loud because we're all saying the same words. Our thoughts are individual. So one person says one kind of sin and the same person reading the same litany of sins and they have something very different in mind. So that's not a Chil Hashem. But if, by some chance, a person goes through the whole long list of Al-Chets and he can't find himself in any of those things, he did something so colorful and exotic, so unique that doesn't none of its covers, guess what you have to do then? Then you have to verbalize your own special Al-Chet with one proviso. Shh. Still hate. Don't sing about it. It's, you don't sing, we sing, don't say, add in whatever I did wrong. That's quiet. So the whole notion of confession is not something which is done for people, but rather it's before Hashem. We confess before God. The only time you would have to verbalize anything you did wrong to a person is if you actually wronged a person. Then you have to obtain their pardon. But if you're looking for Hashem's pardon, don't sing about it. Don't tell anybody about it. All right. So this business of confession, if I'm not telling anybody, why is it necessary? God doesn't know everything. Well, the answer is we need to confess before Hashem. We need to come clean. We need to verbalize, acknowledge, and admit we did wrong. Because if we don't, then we don't really mean it. That's why we confess. And it has to be a sincere confession. You know, sometimes your children or grandchildren fight with each other, and you say, I'm sorry. And the kid's like, no, I'm not saying. And he's like, you know, brazen, and he's insolent. And you say to the kid, you're not going to get A, B, and C. And the kid says, okay, fine. I'm sorry, because Bubby said I should say sorry. He said, that's not sorry. Sorry is sorry. Are you really sorry? You regret what you did? Say it. Ask forgiveness. So, tachlisi of vidui, the whole purpose of a confession then, is l'shamish bitu l'tshuva l'charata shebelev. You're feeling regret in your heart. You're sorry about what you did. Express it. Verbalize. Articulate it. Kedivri harambam. Like the words of the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, chapter 2, halacha 2, quote, Ma hi ha-tshuva. What is tshuva, says the Rambam? What is it? In other words, define this mitzvah. zu gesund. And his answer is who? Sheyazev hachoita chetay. That the sin removes, the sinner removes the sin. V'yasir b'machashavtei. He removes it from his radar screen, his consciousness. V'yigmar b'libay. And he resolves in his heart, Shalo yaseyu oid. I won't do this anymore. The Rambam goes on to say, V'chein yisnochem al sha'avar. Not only he resolves he won't do it more, he really and truly regrets what happened. V'tzarech lehisvades b'sfasov. The Rambam concludes by saying that it's necessary, it's a requisite for a yid who has these feelings in his heart to verbalize through his lips, to actually say it, whatever it is you felt in your heart, whatever sentiments that you strongly identified with, you regretted what you did, you're prepared to resolve for the future, that's nice, now say it. Verbalize those things that are in your heart, express it now before Hashem. So nitana yalachshev, it would have been maybe reasonable to think or suggest, you know when that verbalization will be meaningful? When everything is good, fine, balanced, the way it should be. When the children of Israel sit or dwell securely in their land. There's no reason for us to assume, think, or be suspicious. Maybe this tshuva isn't so sincere. Maybe it's being done because of duress, concern, fear. Maybe you're worried about what might happen. Maybe because of those conditions, one was forced or compelled to do tshuva. But they don't really regret what they're doing. You see, it's like when a person gets caught with the pants down, so to speak, and then they're sorry what they did. Are they really sorry? They tell a story that there was, unfortunately, at the turn of the last century, there was a very, very big lack of Yiras Shamayim. People learned Torah, and some of them were very knowledgeable of Torah, but a sense of reverence and awe for Hashem, you wouldn't necessarily find. So they tell the story about the Slabodka Yeshiva. The Torah study was unbelievable. The scholastics were fantastic. But the reverence of Hashem leaves much to be desired. And I actually know this was the case. My grandfather told me, he heard it from his father, this was the case in a very, very, very serious way. So anyway, this Rosh Shiva comes in and he sees three boys and they're smoking on Shabbos. And he throws a hissy fit. He starts to scream and yell at them, Shabbos, could you? So one boy says, Rosh Shiva, I forgot it was Shabbos. Forget it was Shabbos. How could you forget it? Oh, he says, oh, forget it was Shabbos. And then the next boy, and you, what's your excuse? He says, I forgot you know how to smoke on Shabbos. He says, forgot you know how to smoke. How could you forget how to smoke? And then the third boy, and you? He says, I forgot to lock the door. So that's not a tshuva. That's not regret. Regret that he got caught? That's not regret. He says, I feel really bad I did this. Why? Because I got caught. So you don't feel bad you did it. You got to feel bad you got caught. So somebody would think, ach, bizman ha-golos in the time of exile, shebei b'nei Yisrael save lim tzar v'yisurim, we suffer pain, anguish, travail. Yitochen, maybe yatzar v'yisurim. Maybe it's the pain, maybe it's the suffering, maybe it's the anguish, maybe it's the lack of comfort. Maybe it's the discomfort that brings you into a state of tshuva. Heima mevi'in sa'adam. That brings the person lehizvades ha-chatov. He's not really sincere, he doesn't really think about God. He, under the circumstances, he feels regret. In that sense, the confession is insincere. And this, my dear friends, then becomes a question. Is this a sincere confession? And the thought might be, outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's not really a confession. It's not sincere. Why? Because there are other gurm, there are other causes that lead the person to express himself in this fashion. And that's exactly what the Sifri is talking about. And this is what we learn from the pasuk: they will confess their sin and the sin of their ancestors. Shegam vidui shekazeh, that even such a vidui haneveya mahashpa osam shel yisurei agolos, a vidui, a confession that comes insincerely. It's a secret confession between you and God, but it's maybe an insincere confession, maybe caused by things other than the full sincerity. Afal pikin, nonetheless, we would say, yesh bei te'elas, it has value, merit, and purpose. Ultimately, mitzvah, that too is the mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Which doesn't mean this is not an advertisement promoting insincerity. You should be sincere. However, when it comes to tshuva, even if our tshuva is not 1,000% sincere, and even if there are other things that cause us to regret what we did and resolve for the future, the most important thing is that we should indeed regret the lack of service to Hashem. And we should indeed resolve to do it better. And if it's not 1,000% sincere and there are other things that cause it, no, so be it. The main thing is, follow the course of action and let us continue to go, mechayel el choyel, mending mistakes of yesterday and making sure that the today and certainly the tomorrow is, as the Chassidim used to say, v'zayin asach shener, it'll be much, so to speak, much more handsome, much more appropriate. And then Mashiach comes.